Hey, folks. Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. So the idea behind the podcast is simple. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Ever find yourself feeling lonely and disconnected in a crowd? How about in your marriage? Ever had your spouse say, "We're just not connecting," and you're like, "What does that mean?" Could it be that you're uncomfortable with intimacy? Or maybe you just don't know how to connect well with others because of how you learned to do relationships growing up. There are lots of things vying for our attention today, especially in what's become a highly techno age for relating. So how do we stay connected to the people we love the most? We're going to talk about that today with my guests, Dr. Donald Harvey and his wife, Jan. Dr. Harvey's been practicing marriage and family therapy for over 35 years. He's authored many books dealing with various marital issues, all available through my website on the Heartline Pod link. In 1993, Don joined the faculty at Tribeca Nazarene University, where he established a Master of Marriage and Family Therapy degree program. He's a speaker on both radio and TV, and with Jan, he conducts marriage enrichment weekends. Jan is a licensed marriage and family therapist and maintains an active clinical practice. She also presents at conferences and hosts marriage intensives with Don. Guys, welcome to Heartline.
Thank you, Rita. Good to be with Heartline.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you.
Okay, so today we're talking about staying connected in a disconnected world. Why did you choose this as a topic to address? What were you seeing as the problem?
Well, Rita, I mean, when you look at relationships, look at marriage, forever, it's been about connecting. It's, you know, we're created for intimacy, we're created for closeness, and it's just hard to do. It has been hard, always has been hard, and is getting harder. I mean, if it were simple, we'd all have it. If it were simple, we wouldn't have a divorce rate that's, you know, around 50%. So, you know, it just seems like a very pertinent topic. It's not something that's all of a sudden newly risen that's a problem today and has never been a problem, but I think it's just getting harder.
So what concrete things are we seeing as problems to intimacy and connecting? Is it, I mean, for example, I'm thinking the technology world right now. Everybody's plugged into something. I'm plugged into my computer. My husband's always griping, "You're always on the computer." Or people are on their iPads or their iPhones or they're connected to something. Is that a piece of this? Is that hindering connection and intimacy for people?
But, yeah, I think it is hindering. Aside from the whole pornography issue, we'll just set that aside. That's a huge piece. But what I see is that the more online we are, the less we become attuned to the present and what's going on in our lives and our partner's life. And our ability to attune to each other is what connection's all about. Don has a definition of love that is, "I hear your heart and it matters." And I'm able to stay with you in this moment. I've got your back. We're a team. You know, if it's a problem for you, it's a problem for me. And so when we are online constantly, we're starting to lose that ability to attune. The more that we turn to technology, I think, for just socialization and sometimes just for escape, the more we lose our ability to communicate and problem solve together. I mean, we're actually losing our communication skills. We work at a university, and it's humorous, but, you know, two girls can be having an argument in a dorm, and they're doing it through text when they're sweet mates, and they could just walk through the bathroom and sit down and talk together, and resolve it. But it seems safer to do it that way. But actually, we're kind of eroding our ability to empathize with another person's feelings and our ability to deal with our own feelings. If we get hurt by our spouse, it seems easier to avoid the hurt by just getting on Facebook, where it seems safer, than to really assess what's happened to me and label my feelings and approach my spouse and try to get this repaired. So it's easier, seemingly, to deny the need and kind of silence my longing to be understood by him by just turning to superficial connections. So if you silence your hurts long enough, then you're disconnected.
Absolutely. So technology really is playing a big part. We can break that down into a lot of different pieces for sure. But I think you're right. We're the whole idea of attunement, emotional availability, listening skills, empathizing from the heart level, all that kind of gets pushed aside when we're wrapped up in technology or just the busyness of life. We're all living very busy lives right now.
Well, it's just one more thing to pull us away.
Right.
You know, there's not enough time to go around, so how do we prioritize our time?
Mm-hmm.
And seemingly more and more we're doing it by doing something independently on the Internet.
So what else are you seeing as the problem that's hindering connection?
Well, there's a lot of things that get in the way. And, sometimes I get in the way, sometimes we get in the way, sometimes life gets in the way. But, again, the goal is to connect. And, I come into, just look like Jan and I. My experience as a child was a lot different than Jan's. Jan never, she never had an emotion that wasn't validated. And I grew up in a war zone. So I learned something very different at home, and I learned to be pretty self-sufficient, pretty independent, that people aren't really trustworthy. The only person you can count on is yourself. That helped me to survive there, but I roll into my adult relationships. And, that doesn't work real well in a marriage when we look at what it takes to connect.
Right.
And so that's something that over the years, I've worked on, we've struggled with, et cetera. And that's just something that I brought into the relationship. It doesn't have anything to do with Jan. So there's part of where each of us brings something to a relationship, and that's the I getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's we get in the way. And so we roll into this relationship, maybe influenced by these experiences and what we bring in, but we then create certain types of patterns that may not be real productive. I know in my practice I see a lot of pretty common patterns, but I'm working with a couple who are both what I call withdrawers. They're both avoiders. And so rather than dealing with anything in their relationship, they avoid that. So the relationship looks very calm. It took them over 20 years to get to my office, but they're not connected because they don't deal with anything. And connecting's simple. It's just not easy. Do I deal with the problems, instead of avoiding conflict? And am I willing to be vulnerable and open and self-disclosing that allows me to connect with you? It's simple. It's just not easy. And so we create patterns that maybe get in the way, or one person is very sensitive to rejection and he's a withdrawer, and the other person may feel the disconnect and protest that and gets labeled as a nagger, and so we get this distance or pursuer kind of a pattern, and again, they get into these patterns and nothing gets resolved.
Sure. Part of that is, like we said, the techno world, busyness, stress, overcommitment, all those things.
Yeah, a lot of legitimate things. We can look at the techno world and see that as more of a bad player in this. But, children, when we were at stage two of the marital life cycle, where it's just the two of us and there's no children, it's easier. Romance is easier. Playing together is easier. There's spontaneity in the relationship. You bring children into the mix. Now, that requires us to do something different. We ought to do something different. We ought to parent. We want to parent. It's just, how do we become the three and the four and the five of us and not lose the two of us? And that's the real challenge there. It's how do we balance that? And then, careers. technology has supposedly aided us, and yet we spend more hours working now than we've ever spent. And careers are almost a legitimate obsession. And so how do we get balance with that? You know, church responsibilities. There's a lot of things that pull, legitimate good things that pull at us, and how do we navigate that in a way where we don't get lost as a couple?
Yeah, it's going to take intentional and deliberate effort on our parts. It's going to be about choosing and about risk-taking. The I get in the way piece is I get in the way because I've established these core relational belief systems early on growing up, and those kind of remain static for me. I get into relationship then, and we get in the way by we each bring these into a relationship, and then as a result of that, we develop coping strategies, if you will, ways we learn to manage and cope from all these core relational beliefs that we've developed that basically say how we do relationship. And so all those things contribute to dysfunctional and maladaptive patterns of relatedness.
And we're not talking so much about pathology. This is, 1% of the population, but this is pretty common for all of us. We all struggle with these areas. I was reading recently, about C.S. Lewis's life, and he makes an interesting comment about his early life. And, he says, from my earliest years, I was aware of the vivid contrast between my mother's cheerful and tranquil affection and the ups and downs of my father's emotional life. And this bred in me long before I was old enough to give it a name, a certain distrust or dislike of emotion as something uncomfortable and embarrassing and even dangerous. And this was from an early, early life, again, before he could even put words to it. And we follow his life, and if you've seen the Shadowlands depictions, we into his adult life. He was very much the intellect into the head and feared emotion. And if you're not dealing with emotion, you're not going to be connecting. And that's what he brought with him from childhood.
Yeah. And a lot of us do that. In fact, I was talking to somebody just the other day that says, I don't like intimacy. I don't like connecting. I don't like getting too close to people.
Mm-hmm.
And this person is uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
So do you think that's because of the messages they got when they were young, as we've said, or are some people just born that way? Or is it both?
Well, I think the both is probably the player here. There's too much good research out there to deny that there isn't a part of nature in us. I think probably, though, the comfort level with emotion is maybe a little more influenced by the nurture and our experiences, not so much maybe direct messages, but we're raised in these almost cauldrons, so to speak, you know, with a lot of intensity, and we develop ways to survive. We figure out what's safe for us, and an environment that is safer, we maybe are more comfortable with emotion. Environments that aren't real safe, we learn to protect ourselves, and we're very uncomfortable with that. And so I think that even though there's a place for both, that clearly the nurture aspect is a player here.
So you're talking about these coping strategies that we use to protect ourselves and how that might translate into the marital relationship would be, okay, I learned people weren't trustworthy, kind of what you were saying, you know, as you grew up. And so if people aren't trustworthy, then I can't risk to share my heart. So how that might translate into a coping strategy is that I will choose to emotionally withdraw or shut down or avoid conflict in my relationships.
You know, I think shame is a piece in this. I think a lot of people, there's different levels of shame, but I think one of the emotional barriers to getting close in couples is the shame piece. I think that many people, as Don was speaking about, many people grow up feeling somewhat ashamed of negative emotion. And I have a client right now, and she, as a child, she was told by her father, you know, don't you get emotional with me. That's a sign of weakness. And nobody wants to hear it. Nobody cares. You know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and go on. And so now as an adult, she can't get close to her husband because she can't get vulnerable with him. And she can't explain emotion to him. And then when he gets vulnerable with her and gets emotional with her, she sees him as weak.
Sure.
You know, that's that message that she's gotten.
That core belief. Yeah.
That core belief. Mm-hmm. It's an automatic thought. And to explore with her and just literally give her permission to feel pain and shame and fear. And, you know, if we love someone, we feel fear. Our ultimate worst thought is the fear that that person's going to walk out in some way and abandon us. And so she, just to give her permission to do that, is just a tremendous relief for her to be able to own that and to be able to get vulnerable and close with her husband, because she's had that wall of protection up for so long, and he just can't penetrate it. So get him to be able to just slightly, a little bit, sit behind that wall with her is just a gift to her.
Sure. And to change or modify the beliefs that she has about showing strong emotion or crying or whatever is not weakness. Actually,
right.
It's healthy. And so
it's
helping
strength.
Her modify that belief that she had when she was growing up, where dad said, oh, you're a big baby, or you'll be a baby if you cry, or
right.
big
and
girls.
That was rejection.
Sure.
And so, you know, she doesn't want to be rejected. So that fear of rejection keeps the wall up, and that somehow I'm not enough. You know, I can't be real because that's not enough.
Talk to me about what intimacy is. How do we define that for folks?
Well, you know, different people define it different ways, but if you sort through it, what it seems to distill down to is closeness, that we're feeling close. David Olson, who developed the Prepare and Enrich inventories, which probably many of the listeners have, you know, taken, and a whole lot of research that kind of goes with it, because he does a lot of it with premarital and in premarital situations, actually said, well, there's closeness around emotion. So there's emotional closeness, there's sexual closeness, there's intellectual, there's recreational, there's social closeness. He even said there's a spiritual closeness, and they believed a lot in it. They just couldn't figure out how to measure it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not in the instrument that he developed. Yet, even then, he'll say, but some of these are heavier weighted than others, and the emotional closeness seems to be the big ticket item. So when we talk about intimacy, we're talking about, do you really feel or sense that you are connected emotionally? And that's, again, what we're created for. We're created for that emotional connection. We're emotional beings. And feeling safe, feeling secure in that relationship, knowing that you're number one, that you're the priority, those are kind of the indicators.
Well, I just wanted to mention, you know, Dr. Susan Johnson says that true adult love depends on three things being present. One is accessibility. You know, when I need you, you're there for me. I can count on that. I can trust you. And the second one is responsiveness. You know, when I have a need, you actually respond to me. I mean, I can trust that you will be there and respond, and then that you are emotionally engaged with me, that when you respond, you can respond in an emotional, vulnerable way. As I give that out to you, you can respond back with that. So I think to feel really close, we have to have all three of those working in our relationship.
The first thing the women are thinking is, man, you know, I'm right there with it. I can, you know, put my feelings out there. I can be vulnerable. I can do whatever. It's my husband who won't do that. Men and women have different ideas about what connecting looks like. So what does each one of those genders look like in this?
Well, you know, I know it's real popular to, especially in conservative settings, to draw some pretty stark distinctions between men and women and gender. That's just not what I see. I think at the core that men and women are a whole lot more similar than they are dissimilar, and that they need the same things. They need the sense that they're the priority, that they need the sense that they're cared for. I find women who have a hard time opening up and sharing and self-disclosing, I find men who do a pretty good job with that. And I find that if people, maybe by culture, have not learned to do that well, that they can learn that. Mm. And so I don't know, when you say, how does it look different for men or how does it look different for women, when I work with couples, I see them more as two human beings who have very similar needs. And look specifically, what seems to be getting in the way for them? And we have too many contradictions between the strong gender stereotype to say, oh, it's always one way for one and always for the other. I just see the contradictions, and so I don't go into working with a couple or looking at a relationship through those kind of different lenses. It's what's unique to this couple. What do they need? What seems to be blocking their ability to connect?
Yeah, talk about that a little bit. What do you see with folks as you work with troubled marriages? Because obviously there's a lot of woundedness when a couple comes in and, you know, their hearts are usually closed. How do you help folks with this connection piece? What's the first step to help them connect?
Well, you know, the first step, it can be different for different couples. I see a lot of couples who don't understand how they got where they are. And they know we started off good, and now we're at a bad place, and somehow we just fell in love, and somehow we've just fallen out of love, as if there were no choices in there. And so one of the things that I do very early is let's understand what got you here. And so you felt this way when? And what did you do with that? And then they start putting dots up there, and they start connecting the dots, and they start getting a picture. And that usually gives them some hope.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing is I find couples who have perceptions of each other that are pretty skewed. And we see a person's behavior. So we look at the wife who's been very frantic and screaming and hollering or something. She's upset. And the husband's perception is, this is an unreasonable person whose needs I can't meet. She sees him as somebody who cuts off, who pulls away. He's an insensitive, non-caring person. And what I have to do with them is to not look at where they are on the tip of the iceberg, but what's really driving that train, what's underneath. And I had a couple I worked with last night, and we were able to make those connections. And when he started seeing her as lonely and really crying out for the disconnect, and she was protesting the disconnect, but saw her more as a lonely individual, and she saw him as a protective, I mean, my goodness, if I deal with this, not only am I get hurt, but she's going to get hurt, we're going to get hurt, because he's got that very self-protective thing, and that he was really protecting her, well, they started to soften toward one another. And so usually couples who are caught up in cycles, they have strong misperceptions. They don't see each other. There's a saying that seeing is believing. They're really operating from believing as seeing. So they'll see certain behavior, and that just reinforces, yeah, you don't care, or yeah, you're unreasonable. So those are the things that I see.
Yeah, you're working to get underneath the anger and look at
Correct.
The more vulnerable emotions that lie underneath. The protest is really, hey, I need you. I need you to be here for me when I need you. I'm lonely, I'm sad, I'm whatever. And when you can get to those softer, more vulnerable emotions that lie underneath the anger, then the person can see the other person in a totally different light. And that's where change begins to occur.
Correct. They see them differently, so they soften. They're willing to take some more risks.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to understand what's going on in themselves as well. And instead of responding from and reacting from the anger, which is that secondary tip of the iceberg, they're able to start talking, this is one of those times when I feel scared or lonely or whatever. And spouses hear that. They don't like the attack. They react to the attack. But now we're slowing it down and getting down to what's really going on in our relationship, what's really at our feelings level. And that's how we start seeing change.
Mm. Well, guys, we're out of time today. Thank you so much for joining us. Tell our listeners how they can contact you if they have any questions about staying connected.
Well, we have a website, www.harveytherapy.com, or I can be reached at Trevecca University at dharvey@trevecca.edu. That's TREVECCA.
And I'm also at Trevecca, so I'm just jharvey@trevecca.edu.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to be on Heartline.
Well, you're so welcome. It was great.
Thank you, Rita.
Okay, God bless. Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.